I cut my teeth in working for the BBC in London here, Greater London Radio, in the early 1990s as a researcher on their lunchtime Johnny Walker programme and the Tommy Vance show, Drive Time show in the evening, which was really setting up that day's news. It's addictive. And then went on from there to get involved in land rights campaigning. I mean, I think this is one issue where it was right across the world. We had the land struggles here in Britain 300, 200 years ago that are going on right now in Brazil and China and other places, Sri Lanka too, where government's requisitioning land, kicking people off the land, an absolutely key issue, and which leads into a money system. Once you don't have the resources as a landowner, then you have to go in with their money system. So this is an essential, I think, understanding of why we're in such a fix with money now. It's because we've been robbed of our land in this country hundreds of years ago. What I'm doing now, after that, really got it, my teeth stuck into something called the Bilderberg Group, which I'm sure many of you have heard of. I was shocked to discover that this very powerful institution, which has members which control most of the money in the Western world, was begun under the chairmanship of a former SS officer, and that's Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. And there was also a lot of connections with Bernhard in the war. He was actually given an aircraft by the Royal Air Force, and he was right at the top of British intelligence structures, involved in the planning of Operation Market Garden, where British paratroopers were dropped right into a nest of vipers of SS armoured divisions and wiped out virtually, as many people will know. So Bernhard was certainly not a character that looked like he was trustworthy to run an organisation that was supposed to be looking after our prospects for the future. Then, nowadays, I'm doing producing and presenting a radio programme in Bristol on Bristol Community FM, thisweek.org.uk. I was quite chuffed to see we got phoned up the other week from Belfast. Some people who were trying to listen had noticed half an hour before the programme that the stream wasn't working properly, so nagging our engineers to make sure it works. So there are people around the world listening, and we get comments on our forum on their blog. The website thisweek.org.uk, so you can listen to it as a podcast or live on FM if you're in Bristol. Ultimately, what we've been talking about today on this session is the media. It's all about ownership. We as journalists, in fact, I've recently had some of our equipment taken by somebody, locked away, so we can't get access to it. Mixing desks, microphones, all this kind of thing in Bristol. We as journalists need the equipment. We need ownership of some sort in order to get that stuff out. The transmitters, the studios are not owned by the journalists, they're owned by other people. The printing presses are not owned by the journalists. So it's ownership again, as we were talking about land a little while ago. One of the things that's fascinated me about this child abuse, sexual abuse scandal is the way I've had several requests for people to get hold of old Scallywag material, Simon Regan ran this magazine called Scallywag. And in a way, he was doing, back in the 1980s, it seems, what a lot of bloggers are doing today, which is realising that they cannot get their stories into mainstream press. So they're running little blogs or little magazines of their own. And I think, you know, if anyone here has got any of this old Scallywag material that's not available online, please simply stick it on a scanner, scan it in and make it available for people. Because there's a lot of information there available about some of the scandals that are going on right now, literally tonight on Channel 4 News, you know. That way, we will be helpful for those people. And the internet, I see, as a big filing cabinet. All these documents that David was talking about, many of those, if people have got some stuff in their possession that may be of use to a journalist somewhere, don't leave it in a dusty old cabinet. Get it out there so that someone can maybe contact you to verify it as well, but try and make as much information out there available on the internet as possible. The internet was originally started as some sort of nuclear defense system in the United States. The internet now detects censorship as damage to that system and routes around it. So it's a pretty robust system. It was designed to withstand nuclear attack. Bloggers, Craig Murray, very, very useful, good person. One of the things that I found out recently about him is that he was contacted 30 times by the BBC, by ordinary people like me who used to work for them, asked to come down to maybe even taxis booked for him. And then it was cancelled. This is 30 times in a row. So something's going on somewhere where our BBC that we're paying a licence fee for is not actually doing its job. Someone is somewhere is stepping in and saying, no, we're not having that voice on our television, on British television, which is not a free press by any means. Our show, for example, we do in Bristol. It's great having a bit of that sort of freedom. We did a show a couple of weeks ago about the War of the Worlds, psychological warfare experiment in 1938, which involved Orson Welles and various other people from the Council on Foreign Relations and American Psychological Warfare Department. People killed themselves because they thought there was an alien attack. What we tried to do was something which was the opposite. We did a spoof which was all about what should and could happen to sort out the financial crisis. So we said things like Osborne has been sacked, Vince Cable has been put in place, and there's been a financial firewall put around the country, all the money in tax havens has been seized, people can only get it back if there's a 20% tax on it, and also that all of the major banks in Britain have been requisitioned, taken over by the government, nationalised, and all of the directors of those banks are under arrest. So the idea is sort of to turn around the War of the Worlds from a kind of media fear campaign into something which was a little bit more positive and spreading a bit of hope. Because I think, to a large extent, that's what David was talking about with his Black Mirrors, is there's a tremendous amount of fear out there coming out through the mainstream media. There's also, of course, things like social media, Facebook, which I would be very careful about, who you connect up to on Facebook, making it really a way of getting out mainstream stories, because it is also used as a way of collecting data. I would have thought if Heinrich Himmler had had access to a Facebook database, then there would have been horrendous things going on, even worse, across Europe in the Second World War. And these databases can be incredibly abused. They're obviously for sale, basically. You know, there is very, very little protection for our data once it's out there, and our information, and also our ownership of pictures. All this kind of thing is being handed over to people like Facebook. So I think it's really important to have a look at the BBC. It's supposed to be a sort of socialist institution owned by the public virtually. We have to pay our licence fee. Let's look at what happened in 1987, which is a very important event, I think. And I can remember at the time feeling very uncomfortable the day Alistair Milne's resignation was announced. He'd been putting out all sorts of programs which are critical of the Thatcher government. Programs like Secret Society, My Country Right and Wrong, which was about Northern Ireland. And there was a real move against him. Victor Rothschild contacted Marmaduke Hussey, who just finished destroying the Times, and he'd been taken over chairmanship of the BBC at the time. And there Victor Rothschild asked Marmaduke Hussey, and this is in Hussey's biography, can you sack the Director General? And it annoys me to think that someone from the city would be in touch with someone who's running the BBC to request that they sack the Director General. What on earth is going on there? That's not his job. Anyway, after that, we had Michael Checkland took over, who was an accountant as Director General. Then John Burt. It was at that stage I was working for them as the producer choice, which Burt brought in. Loads and loads of paperwork, wasting time. And actually a completely new regime at the corporation of managerial pen pushers becomes much more difficult to tell the truth when you've got that kind of toxic mixture of cowards and control freaks, which is one of the phrases used about the BBC in the last few weeks. I mean, it's appalling to see what's happened to Liz McKean, who's a Newsnight reporter who did the interviews with Jimmy Savile's victims and then was refused. And she is now actually having to take early retirement and leave, whereas all the people that abused and bullied her as a journalist at the BBC are still in place, and none of them look like they're going to be sacked. Absolutely appalling state of affairs. So that's a little catharsis for the whole Newsnight situation. Luckily, it seems that Channel 4 News have taken up a lot of the stories that the BBC are spiking right now, and are almost every night this week we've had more revelations on Channel 4 News about some horrendous abuse going on. And actually, we've had this stuff about Lord McAlpine the last couple of days. The focus has gone, hasn't it, completely from the victims. It's all about these posh grandees who have been accused of something. Now, it certainly looks as if the police gave the wrong photographs to these abused people and so misled them to thinking that it was somebody else that actually abused them. Absolutely appalling, and hopefully this will, you know, be the story will come out further and further. So there are some positives about getting facts on big events. 7/7 for me was a very important event. I was involved in covering IRA terrorism here in London, and we produced this little thing. If people are interested, you can get it online, which is all the background we could find on good documentaries on the 7/7 London bombings. Some of it difficult to verify, but there, that is par for the course with some stuff. You know, what you do is you don't say necessarily this is all fact, but this is some interesting information. Make your own mind up. We're not trying to tell you what to think. Go through some of this, and particularly one documentary, which is called Ludicrous Diversion, which came out just about 6 months after the 7/7 bombings, really asked some of the very, very fundamental questions which have still not been answered. And one of the reasons they've not been answered, all you need to do is read this to understand it. And how many people have got a copy of this book? The Untouchables. Dirty Cops, Bent Justice and Racism in Scotland Yard by Michael Gillard and Laurie Flynn. Now, these two guys were working for The Guardian on a lot of the material that's in this book, and The Guardian's lawyers basically said, look, this is far too hot and sensitive, we can't do it, so they published it as a book. Now, their lawyers then went for the book publishers, and they haven't been able to reprint and get a reprint of it. So it's a difficult book to get hold of. Now, this is the book that some of the far-right lunatics in this country would love to see burnt. So get yourself a copy, one way, by hook or by crook. A lot of this, what we've been talking about to do with this child abuse that Ben picked up on, is a police failure. I think when you take these kind of cases to the police and nothing happens, this creates a kind of kudos for the abuser, and also it creates a climate where nothing is going to be done, that justice is not going to be served. Yes, you're going to get fined for your parking ticket, but when someone is sexually abused as a child, nothing's going to happen. So I think ultimately this whole scandal will have to see some kind of real serious changes going on in policing, and a much more open. I mean, we've had police and crime commissioners, haven't we, being appointed around the country next week. But these police and crime commissioners, if they've done something wrong in their teenage years, we're now being told in Bristol, one guy that was fined £5 when he was 16 cannot be a police and crime commissioner, and yet our chief police officers are not even being vetted. Unbelievable imbalance. We've got a senior, I mean, this has happened in Wiltshire, a guy who killed himself recently, one of the senior police in Wiltshire, hadn't been vetted. The Home Office thought that ACPO had done it, ACPO thought the Home Office had done it, the Home Office thought that the police authority had done it, nobody had done it. So if we're going to have high standards for our police and crime commissioners, we've got to have high standards too for our senior police. I think the context of all of this is that we're living in a world where we've got an evil financial system. And I say evil because a lot of the money, a lot of power now, and I see it almost like dealing with the same sort of power that was around in the Second World War, the Nazi power. A book was brought to my attention by a guy called Paul Manning, who worked in the Second World War for CBS News. CBS was covering the Second World War, sitting in Lancaster bombers and American flying fortresses going over Nazi Germany, writing about the experience for the American public, and then broadcasting when he got back. He, after the war, wrote a book called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. Now, what this book does is it looks at laundered money from after the Second World War. As the Nazis went across Europe and then came back to Berlin, they had a tremendous amount of loot they got. Got both gold, paintings, all sorts of stuff. This loot was then, during the last year of the war, from basically the Falaise Gap after D-Day, was taken back to various places around the world, mostly to South America, and it was laundered through Sullivan and Cromwell's law firm in New York. And so they ended up with a fantastic amount of money. Martin Bormann was in charge of this network of 350 companies that he set up around the world, and they invested this looted money in these companies, and they put former SS people in the directorships, basically just taking off their swastikas and putting on suits and going around the world as a Fourth Reich. Now, that book is, I think, really important to read. I know Martin picked up on some very interesting facts that also Jewish people were basically bought off in Israel. Issa Harrell was a Mossad agent. He was chasing Nazis in South America, and then he was taken off the job after he got hold of Adolf Eichmann. At that point, I think Israel as a country lost its soul. If they're not going to, because we weren't going after these Nazi war criminals, the Americans weren't, because we were working with them. We wanted to use them to fight the Cold War against the Soviet Union. But the Mossad were going after them up until the mid-60s, when they were taken off because of the financial power of this network. I mean, don't just trust me, have a look at the book. It's very well documented by a fantastic guy who had his eldest son shot dead about a week after the book was published, and his publisher had his kneecaps broken a few weeks after it was published. That is Paul Manning's book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. So I think I mean, certainly the way I see things now is we're not dealing with armoured and mechanised tank divisions as they were, you know, our grandfathers and uncles and aunts and things. We're dealing with a financial network of power, and it's absolutely ruthless, and it's taking over ownership of stuff that Hitler would possibly only have dreamed of. So what do we do about all this? I think what we need is small independent groups, production houses, and basically to go for what Mohim was talking about, basically a hit list. Let's identify the criminals. Let's make it absolutely clear to people, put things in context. Why is it so much, why are there so many of these black mirrors about? Why is it that we have so much trouble in our country? We can't fix this financial crisis. Of course we can. We could do it overnight if there was the will to do it, but there isn't. Because so many of those political powerful positions, including finance, religion, yeah, let's look at the way that the unopen way in which the new Archbishop of Canterbury was chosen, totally secretive. And what have we got? A guy who's been a bishop for a year and a former oil executive. Unbelievable way to run a church. So these are the big powerful institutions. Certainly, my view, most of them are owned and controlled. So we need small groups, I think, of people. I'm quite happy to always to be approached to work on projects with people to produce material to distribute online, possibly on Russia Today. We can't really do it with Press TV anymore because they've closed the Ofcom have closed them down. The satellites have been closed down as well. The ownership of the satellites. We're talking about journalism, but the satellites also. The journalists don't own the satellites. So let's try and create an environment where journalism can thrive and that we can get through this difficult time we're having, because we are heading towards a kind of pincer movement, to go back to the Second World War analogy, with the financial crisis on this side, okay, maybe a three-way pincer movement, with the climate crisis on the top and a potential Third World War in the Middle East. So we certainly need to think in a slightly military terms if we're in order to beat these people. So do try and have a listen to the programme, and it'd be lovely to have some questions on what we do and about how successful media can be in the future. So thanks very much for listening. Yeah.